From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, December 24th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
State energy officials have recommended a major build-out of battery systems to store electricity produced by renewable power. And they say incentivizing developers can help meet Maine's climate goals and lower household energy bills. Peter McGuire has more.
The governor's energy office says regulators should start a competitive process to build 200 megawatts of energy storage. Batteries can save energy made by intermittent wind and solar power, then sent to homes and businesses at times of low production or peak demand. That flexibility could reduce Maine's reliance on fossil fuel power plants for immediate electricity needs. And the agency estimates battery storage could save consumers at least $1.50 per month over 10 years. Energy Office Director Dan Burgess, in a statement, says energy storage is, quote, an essential tool that will help us build the grid of the future while stabilizing energy costs for Maine households and businesses. Maine already has 63 megawatts of battery storage installed. A huge 175-megawatt storage development in Gorham is under construction. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
A report from the Catherine Cutler Institute at the University of Southern Maine finds that older adults in residential care programs have higher needs than in prior years. The report finds that 54% of people in residential care have dementia, compared to 51% in nursing homes. And the percent of older adults in residential care who need help with daily tasks has also increased. Maine's long-term care ombudsman Brenda Gallant says one reason for the shift is that many nursing homes have closed.
So there's less access to care at that level of care. And so people who ordinarily would move to a higher level of care may not be able to.
Gallant says the state has issued proposed rules to boost staffing. Advocates for long-term care facilities have raised concerns about increased staffing requirements, citing a workforce shortage. The state's plan to convert former courthouses into housing is moving forward after the sales of courthouses in Biddeford and Sanford earlier this month. The Mills administration approved the plan after three district courthouses in York County closed when the state opened a new York Judicial Center last year. Diane Small, the executive director at the Sanford Housing Authority, says when the state came to her with the opportunity, she knew it would be a challenge.
We thought, okay, so this is going to be challenging because it's a courthouse with interior rooms with no windows, no insulation, kind of a difficult retrofit. But we did a feasibility study and thought, yep, this is a great way for us to really leverage some money because we bought it from the state for a dollar to really repurpose that building for housing.
Small says the authority plans to convert the building into 18 units of housing for adults ages 55 and older, pending additional funds. State officials are considering selling a third courthouse in York, though the plans for that location are unclear. The University of Maine System Board of Trustees will not financially divest from Israel, the board's chair announced late last week. The decision came after students petitioned the university, and the board held a special session on the issue last week. Maddie Smith has more.
The petition had signatures from 16 student organizations and almost 560 individual staff members and students across the system, asking trustees to end investment in Israeli companies and any U.S.-based companies doing business with or in Israel. The six demands outlined included ending academic ties with Israel, acknowledgement of the tragedy in Palestine, and adopting the Jerusalem Declaration on Anti-Semitism. Board Chair Trish Riley said in a statement to the petition organizers that to, quote, take a position on your demands would effectively shut down opportunities for conversation. Riley said it was not the role of the trustees to take a position on matters of foreign policy. On its Instagram, the UMaine Jewish Voices for Peace student group said they will continue to attend board meetings to voice support for divestment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
This year marks the 125th anniversary of the Audubon Society's Christmas Bird Count. In Maine, the tradition has been popular since the 1960s and happens all across the state, from the greater Portland area to Monhegan Island. Molly N. King has more.
It's one of the biggest annual community science efforts in the country. Every year, for a few weeks surrounding the holidays, groups of volunteers go out in the cold and attempt to count every single bird they see within their designated section of a 15-mile radius. Doug Hitchcox, a staff naturalist for Maine Audubon, says that while the science isn't as rigorous as a controlled study, there's no way they'd be able to collect this sheer amount of data without lots of people involved.
What I like about it is the idea that, like, every bird counts. I feel like, you know, so often birders, we talk about the rare birds, finding the elusive things, but during a Christmas bird count, you are trying to count every single chickadee, every pigeon in the city. You find a massive flock of gulls, and it's like, all right, we need to count all, you know, 350 of these.
Hitchcox says as long as the data is collected and organized in the same way every year, researchers can still draw trends and see patterns, even if the greenest volunteers are involved. As the climate warms, the count data has allowed Maine Audubon to identify several birds, like the northern cardinal and the Carolina wren, that are staying in the state further and further into the winter. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly N. King.
And two local business owners have prevented a real-life nightmare for the employees and fans of WKIT 100.3, the Bangor rock station owned by horror writer Stephen King. Jeff Saleri and Greg Hawes say they've reached an agreement with King to purchase the station, which had been slated to cease operations by the end of the year. Saleri says he's wanted to own a radio station ever since he was a kid, and the legendary WKIT is important to the community.
It's kind of a unicorn. I mean, it's one of the last true live, locally staffed radio stations in the country.
WKIT's parent company announced earlier this month that all three of its radio stations would cease operations at the end of the year. The company said the stations were never profitable, and King personally covered revenue shortfalls. Saleri says he and Halls only purchased WKIT so they can make it profitable, and they'll keep it live and local. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. A programming note for tomorrow: special holiday programming will preempt Maine Calling tomorrow morning at 11, and This Day in Maine will take tomorrow off for the Christmas holiday. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.